You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products. Because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
I lived my teenage years with my grandparents. They're the people who taught me what love is. And living with them and watching them sit on the front porch and not say anything, that was what was amazing. They would sit and practically not say anything particular. It was just that comfort that they seemed to give each other. And I just think that you learn so much from listening and watching and being a part of other people's love and of loving them. That's what you're trying to do, and you're trying to give and receive that love.
That was one of America's most famous poets, Nikki Giovanni, talking about some of the influences on her work. And her work is legendary, having been honored with prizes ranging from the Carl Sandburg Literary Award to the American Book Award to 7 NAACP Image Awards, just to name a few. I'm Milan Verveer, and this is Seneca's 100 Women to Hear. We are bringing you 100 of the world's most inspiring and history-making women you need to hear. Oprah has called Nikki Giovanni a living legend. She first burst onto the scene in 1968 with her self-published book of poetry, Black Feeling, Black Talk. That was the start of a career that spanned numerous children's books, nonfiction, essays, recordings, film, and of course, poetry. 53 years after her first book, she's still writing, teaching at Virginia Tech, and engaging in activism. Listen and learn why Nikki Giovanni is one of Seneca's 100 women to hear. I'm here today with Nikki Giovanni, one of America's foremost poets, and I'm so thrilled to be able to engage her in conversation for this podcast. Welcome, Nikki.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
You are one of the most famous living poets. You've produced almost 20 books of poetry. You've won countless awards, including the American Book Award. Oprah has named you a living legend. Somehow you've also found time to write numerous books for children, as well as nonfiction. And you're teaching creative writing at Virginia Tech. What an extraordinary contribution you have made with your creative genius. How do you see your legacy given all of this?
Well, thank you. That sounds really great. I just try to do my job every day, and I'm not trying to be humble, but I grow, and as I grow, my work grows with me. So I have a child. I have a son. He's grown now. And of course, I'm going to write children's books because I have a son. But as we grow, a little bit older, he and I, he has a daughter. And so I ended up writing children's books because I wanted, her name is Kai, she's a sweetheart. There were things I wanted Kai to learn, and there were things I wanted her to see and to hear. I enjoy every day. Well, I'm glad every day that I wake up. I think people forget that it's an honor and a pleasure and a privilege to wake up every day. And I do, and I try to capture, if I'm writing or if something occurs to me, I try to capture whatever it is that I'm thinking through. And I don't want to sound, as I said, I don't want to sound humble, and I don't want to sound as if I'm somehow, you know, you wake up and run to the computer and type out something. But I think that poetry is a story to be shared. I think that the idea of poetry is a story to be shared. And in sharing that story, it was shared, my grandmother, I lived with my grandmother, shared stories with me. And I'm carrying that tradition on to share stories, not only with my granddaughter, but with any other kid that I can run into. And I enjoy that. I enjoy the writing. So I don't know what legacy, you know, I'm, like most people, I'm bound to be forgotten. Actually, I say to my students, you know, one of the probably disadvantages of being a writer is that most writers aren't known for being worth anything until 100 years later. most of the writers don't even get published until they're dead and gone. So I don't try to think about that. I try to think about, what am I sharing today, and how can I share it and make it work? Sometimes it's happy. Sometimes it's sad. A lot of time it's funny. And I just want to share where I am at that moment. You can almost throw my work up in the air and realize how old I was when I wrote that, whatever that is.
That's so beautifully said. And you know, there's a lot of gems of wisdom packed into your response. And clearly, you're not going to have to wait 100 years for people to discover the worth of your extraordinary work. So it goes on every day in that realm as well. But, you know, it really is a gift to be able to connect with all levels in one's writing. And you seem to manage to do that, whether it is a child or whether it is someone, you know, with more years under her belt and looking for other insights that you bring.
Well, you know, I've always, well, you don't know, and I don't mean it like that. I hate people that start off, you know, but I've always had an affection for older people. And I lived my teenage years with my grandparents. And my grandparents, and I mentioned it in my latest book, it's called Make Me Ring. I mentioned that it was, and I dedicated it to them, though they are gone, that they're the people who taught me what love is. And living with them and watching them sit on the front porch and not say anything, that was what was amazing. That grandmother would smoke. Grandpapa never did smoke. But grandmother would, at the end of dinner, I had to wash the dishes because I was the youngest person there. But she and grandpapa would go and sit on the porch. And you learn, you know, you learn what you watch and what you listen to. And it would just be quiet. They would sit and practically not say anything particular, but it was just that comfort that they seemed to give each other. But I also, if I may share, grandmother liked pineapple, which to this day, I'm 77 years old, I dislike pineapple. But grandmother liked pineapple, and grandpapa did all of the shopping. He never would let her go. We lived in Knoxville, Tennessee, so it was a market. There were no grocery stores like that. And so he would go to the market. And as he would come home, he would have the two bags that he was carrying. And we lived up, you had to come up several steps to get to us. And when he got to that first step, her name is Luvinia, he would say, "Luvinia, Luvinia, they had pineapple." And she would beam. And it was something just watching his pleasure in bringing her pineapple. And her pleasure in not just the pineapple, but that he thought of her. As I say, I just like pineapple. So I knew what was going to happen for Sunday ice cream, because he made the ice cream on Sunday. We were going to have pineapple ice cream, which I hate. But I thought, oh, that's what love is. That little bit. He was just so pleased. Luvinia, they had pineapple. And I just think that you learn so much from listening and watching and being a part of other people's love and of loving them. That's what you're trying to do. And you're trying to give and receive that love.
What a terrific story. You know, I can just conceptualize them as you describe them. A lot of that has to do with your gift as a writer as well. You were just recounting some of your years with your grandparents. And I wonder if we can also go back a little bit to your years then at university. Yeah, you went to Fisk, the historically Black university, received your undergrad degree. Did that have a tremendous influence on you?
Oh, I'm sure it did. Grandpapa was a Fisk graduate. He graduated in 1905, and he was the first person in his family, in the Watsons, who did graduate from college. So when I was accepted in Fisk, I was an early entrant. So I took a test in the 11th grade and passed it and went on to, I didn't graduate from high school. I went on to Fisk. I have to say, in all fairness to Fisk, obviously I was immature, and immature people do immature things. So ultimately, I got kicked out. But while I was being kicked out and trying to pull myself together, I wasn't like mean or anything, just foolish. I finally realized, no, I need my education. I have to go back to Fisk. And grandpapa passed, but I knew grandmother would be pleased, which she was. She came to my graduation with my mother. Mommy and grandmother came. And Fisk is a great school. Of course, Fisk created, W.E.B. Du Bois created sociology. And the Fisk Jubilee Singers, of course, sang for Queen Queen Victoria, excuse me, and became the Jubilee Singers because of Queen Victoria. When I met Queen Elizabeth, who asked, as you can imagine, asked to see me, because one doesn't ask to meet the Queen. She asked to meet me because she had said, or they said, she said, and I don't believe it, oh, she really enjoys your poetry. She'd love to meet you. She's going to be in the United States. Would you come? Would you like to meet her? And yeah, I just don't believe things like that. So I have a problem. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. But I wanted her to know that we had a connection. And one of the things that I'll never forget to my dying day is, you know, meeting somebody like Queen Elizabeth, you have to take time because she meets so many people. So I just kind of stood and didn't do anything. And she looked back up, you know, how they meet you and you say, ma'am, it's such a pleasure, things like that. And she looked back up like, what are you still doing here? And I said, ma'am, we have something in common. And I will never forget. And she said, oh? And you know, the British talk so funny, oh? And I said, yes, ma'am, I attended Fisk University. And your great-grandmother, Victoria, invited the Jubilee Singers to come to England. They spent a year with her and taught and sang with her for the spirit, sang for her, sang the spirituals. And she was like, oh, you know, and she doesn't know much about the spirituals, but I just thought she should know that we have something, she and I had something in common. And you're just trying to, you know, go through all of it. Fisk is important. And Fisk actually, as does everybody, could probably use a little more money and some things like that. But in its beginning, we had great, and we have good people now, but we had great people. W.E.B. Du Bois, as I mentioned, we had Aaron Douglas when I was there. And you could see Mr. Douglas, the painter. You could see Mr. Douglas walking across campus. And, you know, you just look at him and smile and say, oh, you know, hi, Mr. Douglas. And you'd go on about your business. Robert Hayton, though, taught us English. He was an English teacher. And, of course, Bob Hayton is one of the great writers in America. And one of my mother's favorite poems was Those Winter Sundays. And when Mommy was buried, that was the poem that she wanted, one of the poems she wanted read. And Arna Bontemps was our librarian. So we had a lot of great people we were around. And as we, the students, when I came back the second time, I wanted to be a little more reasonable and put some things together. But we were able to say to Fisk, we think we need a writing teacher. And we were actually able to hire John Oliver Killens. And when John came down, which was really wonderful, he came with his daughter. He brought his daughter, Barbara. And he said, oh, we need a festival. And we ended up having a poetry festival. And now everybody does. So it was kind of, Fisk is wonderful. And it's still, it's got to make some changes. And I think a lot of schools, a lot of people don't want to make changes, but changes have to be made. And Fisk is going to have to make some in order to maintain its quality.
So you graduated from Fisk then, having gone back. You mentioned your grandmother was at your graduation, at your commencement, and she died shortly thereafter, as I understand.
Yes, she did.
That must have been so difficult for you, given how close you were to her.
Death is difficult. You know, I don't even know how to say that. And I'm not indifferent to death. I was sorry to lose grandmother. And when I think about home, even now, you and I are talking, when I say home, I think of and I speak of grandmother and grandpapa in Knoxville, Tennessee. I don't speak of my mother and father in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm not mad or anything. That's not who I think of when I think of home. So missing grandmother is a normal to me. You're going to miss people. And I've always, and I still do, I dislike people. When you lose somebody, you lose your mom or you lose your grandmother, and somebody will come up. I guess they think they're being nice. And they say, oh, you'll get over it. Well, I don't want to get over it. I'm 77 years old. I'm going to miss my grandmother until the day that I die. And I like to think of grandmother because I'm a Baptist. I grew up in the her church was Baptist, and I mommy's church was AME, African Methodist Episcopal. But I like to think of grandmother sitting in heaven with grandpapa sitting on that porch. And I think, you know, heaven is a good idea to me. I know people say, well, you know, how do you know that? And what about spirits? But I'm into spirits. I think that you hear things. I think that things come to you. That there are times when something says, don't go there or do this or whatever. And if you listen to your inner heart, you will have a lot of things. So, yes, I miss grandmother, but if you're born, you're going to die. And so that is something we don't accept, just something that has to happen. But I don't have a right to keep her from being with grandpapa sitting in heaven. And she's smoking. I'm sure that she's smoking, and he's sitting there saying, you know, Luvinia, if you don't stop that, but you're always going to miss the people you love. That's why you love them.
But her passing was very pivotal to your poetry, was it not?
Grandmother was and remains the person that I want to please. So I'm doing things, and I want my grandmother to be proud of it. When the African American Museum opened in Washington D.C., I, like many people during the Black Arts Movement, I was a part of it. And I went not to the legacy opening, because that was going to be the president of the United States. That was going to be Barack Obama was going to be there. And then you had the Secret Service. So we went the day before when you just didn't have all of that. And I was walking and walking and walking, and you turn and turn. And unless you've seen the museum, it's difficult to explain, but it's a circle. You just go up and up and up. And I got to one point on the second level, and I turned right. And in turning right, you see a lot of photographs. And left are the ladies, the old ladies, wonderful old ladies, who are stopping to tell their story. But I turned right, and there was a photograph, or there is a photograph of me. And without even thinking, I turned left to say grandmother. And I realized I had said it. I had actually said grandmother, because I wanted her to see I did my job. And it was tears came to my eyes when I realized what I had done. I was wanting my grandmother to be there to see it. And, you know, there's just people you do care about, and there are people not that I don't care about other people, but there are people that you want to please, and there are other people that you just want to do a good job.
Seneca's 100 Women to Hear will be back after this short break.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. Symbiotica.com.
So your first collection was Black Feelings, Black Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you published that at a young age. You weren't long out of college and you self-published it. Now, why was that?
Because at that point, nobody was interested in what ultimately became Black Arts. And I had this little book, I had some poetry, and that's what I could do. I can't play tennis, I can't sing, I can't dance, I'm not going to be a movie star. All I can do is write, and I have stories to tell. And so I had it. I had some stories, and I thought, well, rather than try to do that which cannot be done, because at that point, nobody's going to publish a Black poet's writing. I mean, I'd have been a fool to think so. So I found a publisher. I found a printer who was a very nice guy. And I was living in New York. And my question was, how much would it cost for me to get 100 books? And so he laughed. He said, well, I can get you 100 books for $100. And I said, well, that's great, because then I can sell 100 books at $1 a piece and I will break even. But the good part, and this is the best part, is that if I sell those 100, when I come back, I can get 100 more at $50, because the print thingamajiggies had already been made.
The print was set. Yeah.
Yeah. The publishing anymore. We just had to print it. And so that would make me get 100 books for $50. And that was really great, because I did that the second time. And when we sold that, which was really wonderful, I have $50. As it would be to the good. Now, anybody who writes poetry knows you're not going to get rich being a poet. And so none of us are. I'm not either. But that $50 is going to allow me to bring another book. And so that's what I did. I published them. And then they had the Detroit Festival of Fine Arts. And I met Dudley Randall. And I said to Dudley, well, I am going to publish my books, because he was publishing Broadside, which was a broadside. It was one single. He was very close to Gwen Brooks. And so he's going to publish that. And I said, well, why don't we come together? And I will simply have my next book say a Broadside publication, but I will take care of everything. And if there's any money, which there's not going to be very much, I'll have it. And if we lose, you won't lose anything. So Dudley and I got together to decide we should take that second step. And that's how we did it. And then William Morrow came to me. I had lunch with Phil, a wonderful young man named Phil Petrie. Phil Petrie came to me and he said, you know, we've been watching what you're doing and we'd like to publish you. I said, I would like to be published, because running a business is difficult. And I didn't ever want to be a business person. And I said, That's super. That's great. You know, do it. And so I ended up, and I've been with them ever since. I was, I think, 26 years old or 27 years old. And I've been with William Morrow, who is a part, as you know, of HarperCollins. I've been with them ever since. I won't change. I won't get another publisher. I will always be with them. And it's good because I'm not, I didn't want to jump around. I wasn't looking for anything special. As I said, you know, if you're a poet, you're not going to make a lot of money. So the first thing you have to do is let yourself go. I'm not going to deal with trying to make a lot of money. And once you do that, then you can go on and do your work, which is writing. My work is writing.
Well, breaking into William Morrow was a huge accomplishment, and at a very young age, very reputable publisher. So that must have been just a terrific opportunity for you. Now, one of the most famous poems that you've written is Nikki Rosa, and it starts, "Childhood remembrances are always a drag if you're Black." Tell us what that poem means to you and what prompted it.
Well, what prompted that poem, of course, was that everybody wants to tell Black people how terrible it is that your life. And I'm still quite tired of hearing people say, oh, you know, it was really hard. We were poor. And everybody's poor. You know, you got like in the world, you probably have a half a dozen rich people. So I got tired of hearing that sob story. And I really like Nikki Rosa. That's what they call me, was Nikki Rosa at that point. Just call me Nikki. And I just thought, all the while, whatever else it is, I didn't mention my grandparents at that point in that poem, but the last line is so important that, and all the while, I was quite happy. And I just wanted to say that you can't let other people make a decision about your life and about how your life is and how you should look at it, because 90% of everybody's life is not the life we live, but the life we imagine we're living. And so you have to be careful, you know. But I'm not very good. I'm talking to you now through a podcast on one of these things, a computer. But I'm not very good at any of the electronic things. And I think that my generation is very lucky not to have had Facebook and Twitter and all of that stuff, because you got so many lies. And all of those lies start to make people feel, oh, something is wrong with me. I got a note yet last night from so-and-so, and they had a good time at a party, and I wasn't invited to the party. And the next thing you know, they're upset about that. And you're thinking, no, wait a minute, you need to get off of the computer and get down to something that makes a little more sense. You need to find your own happiness, because happiness is an inner. It's something inside of you. It's not something outside of you. And I think that is very, I think it's very important that you not allow, for lack of a better word, lies to keep coming at you. And you're thinking, I'm the only one who's not happy. I'm the only one who's not rich. I'm the only one who's not getting good grades. And I feel sorry for the kids, because I think they have a lot of pressure on them that my generation didn't have.
Yeah. And that's also a lesson, I think, in terms of what you've just imparted. Now, you've been associated with the Black Arts Movement, certainly in the 60s and on. You're an activist as well as a poet. How do you see the connection between politics and poetry? I've often thought that artists can see society, see politics through a very special lens. What's the artist's role in the social movements of our time?
I think that poets particularly have always been a part of the leadership of changing the world. And I think that we, and I'm saying we who are writers now, we're lucky that, you know, nobody's crucifying us or nobody is burning us at the cross or something. And the poets have been that kind of fight. We've been considered witches. We have been considered just terrible things. And as we go through the last couple of thousand years, you can see that poets have always been in the leadership. And I think that as a poet, you just want to do your job and you would like not to be killed. And so right now, we're getting a lot of people who are being killed, but they're not being poets. So obviously somebody is doing something either right or wrong. I have a great affection, of course, for Black Lives Matter, because I think they are doing an enormously important and good job. But for the most part, we who are poets are just trying to say, this is what we see and this is how we see it. And we have now gotten to the point that we seldom, I'm not going to say never, because when we look at Russia and we look at Eastern Europe, We look at parts of Africa. We look at people who are still being killed because they're trying to tell the truth. And we're looking at people like our former president, who has these great lies and has everybody afraid of him because they're trying to tell the truth. And so poets are going to continue to tell the truth. And hopefully we won't get shot or bombed, or, you know, the plane won't fall out of the sky. You know, hopefully we'll live to do our job. That's all we can do.
Yeah, and it is a vital role that so many poets and artists have played in that respect. What do you think of today's young poets? I understand you were very moved when Amanda Gorman got up and recited her poem at the inauguration.
I was very happy for Ms. Gorman and for the publicity and the she's building a career, and I hope that it does well. I'm the little old lady who's fond of seeing some of the younger kids come up. And I think, though, everybody, especially writers, have to be careful. And a part of what you have to be careful about is that you do your work and that you don't get so tied up in who you are or what magazine cover you're on. But I think that Ms. Gorman is an intelligent, obviously she's an intelligent young woman. And I think that she will find a way to make sure that she's doing her job. My favorite celebrity, I was trying to think of what the word is, but my favorite celebrity is Venus Williams, because Venus has handled celebrity better than any of her generation. And she has been so cool, it was just the word. She has really handled herself. And you have to admire watching the pressure that Venus Williams was under and how she handled that pressure. And of course, Serena is very lucky to have had a big sister to look out for. And that's what you're hoping, that that we go forward. So I was, of course, who wasn't pleased with Ms. Gorman's poem, and I wish her the best, as I'm sure we all do. But I think that, again, and as someone who has been through a lot of that, I really wish she could talk to Elizabeth Taylor. I wish that Elizabeth Taylor were alive and could talk to her about the kind of pressure you can be under. And I say Liz Taylor because I always think of the people who got under so much pressure and still had to kind of find a way to handle it. You have to be careful with all of that so-called celebrity. You have to be careful because all of the people smiling at you don't like you.
You know, Nikki, you seem to have such a wonderful outlook on life. You talked a little bit ago about being grateful for each day and observing all of those small things that are yet packed with so much meaning. What makes you optimistic these days, and how do you keep writing? What keeps you writing?
Well, I write because words are all I know. And if it's all you know, then that's what you do. At one point in my life, I wished that I could paint, and I've painted a couple of things. If you were at my home, you'd see a couple of my paintings, and then you would see why I couldn't be a painter. But it's really, I like to write, and I like to share my ideas, and I like to explore my ideas. I am a space freak, which most people know, and I'm really excited about how Earth is going to respond to life in the galaxy. We do know that there must be life in the galaxy because we know that there is water on Mars. And wherever there is water, there is life. So these are the kind of things we need to be teaching our children. If I could be president of the United States or the head of the United Nations or something really important, I would try to make all of the nations teach their children and their people that we are earthlings, that we have lived long enough trying to be black and white and Christian and Jewish and Muslim and whatever. It's finished. Third planet from yellow sun is Earth. And as we are going around and around, and we have problems here because the water is having problems, the air is having problems, but we are spending some time in the galaxy. And as we are, we have to be prepared. Somebody's going to ask us, in some kind of language, whether we know it or not. Who are you? And the answer to that has to be, I'm an earthling, because nothing else will make sense. And I think that it's time for us to take those steps. So if you say, what makes me excited, what I'm excited about, and I don't know, my father, my grandfather's family lives a long time. My grandmother, they don't live so long. But I'm really hoping that I can live long enough to see a real, what we are calling alien. But I live with aliens every day. So the alien was elected president of the United States in 2016. So it doesn't get more alien than that to me. So I'm looking for what the life form is that's coming. And I hope I'm around. I hope that I'm around. And I don't smoke, but I do have a glass of champagne most evenings. And I'm just hoping I will be sitting in my, I have a little fish pond. And I'm hoping that I'd be sitting in my fish pond and the fish would all of a sudden start talking or whatever it is fish should do. And I will realize that something living is sitting next to me. And I could turn around and say, how are you? I'm an earthling. And I want them to say I'm a Martian or I'm a Jupiterian or whatever. I would love to find out what other life form there is, because it's illogical in this galaxy that we on Earth are the only life forms. That's just illogical. So it's time that we begin to prepare ourselves for the logic of what else is living with us.
Well, to all of the earthlings who are listening to this wonderful conversation, thank you so much, Nikki Giovanni, for spending time with us. I hope that our listeners who are not acquainted with your work will become acquainted. It is a wonderful feast to be able to engage with you by reading your great work, and that they will certainly pick up your latest collection called Make Me Rain. Speaking of water, Make Me Rain. Thank you so much, Nikki Giovanni.
Oh, thank you.
There was so much wisdom in what Nikki Giovanni had to say. Here are three things I took from that fascinating conversation. First, Nikki reminds us of the beauty of everyday life. As she says, people forget that it's an honor and a pleasure and a privilege to wake up every day. Second, Nikki shows us the power of observation. She so movingly described what she learned when living with her grandparents, the joy of listening and watching, and what she calls being a part of other people's love. Finally, Nikki's enduring curiosity is invigorating. She calls herself a space freak, enthusiastic to find out how our world will respond when we come in contact with life from other planets. She reminds us how much we all have to look forward to. Tune in next Tuesday to hear about our next featured woman and discover why she's one of Seneca's 100 Women to Hear.
Seneca's 100 Women to Hear is a collaboration between the Seneca Women Podcast Network and iHeartRadio, with support from founding partner P&G. Have a great day.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath,
and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.